Well, hey, Power Agents, Daryl Davis here. So listen, I am very excited about this month's interview. We have Corey Mascara. Now, let me just tell you who Corey is. And the best way, I can go through his whole resume, but let me just tell you what Dr. Oz from The Oz Show says about Corey. He is one of the nation's leading experts in mindful meditation. Now, before you tune off about meditation, let me just say a few other things. More credibility about Corey. He's an assistant instructor for the Master of Applied Positive Psychology at the University of Pennsylvania. He has spoken over 5,000, trained over 5,000 people on this topic. He's lectured at Wharton Business School, Dartmouth, Columbia, etc. Now, let me just tell you why I wanted us to do this interview for you. It has been proven positive psychology, which is a new study over the past several years, proves that you and I have a happiness baseline, that when we have something happen, where you know we get a surge of enthusiasm or excitement, but after that surge, we go back to this baseline of happiness. We all have different baselines. Science has proven that when we start to implement mindful meditation, we actually can raise and increase that happiness baseline. Now, some of the things that Corey talks about, and this is why I'm so excited for you, is by just doing some of the things he's going to share, you'll be more present, less fearful when calling FSBOs and expireds, doing listing appointments. You know, the little voice inside our heads that stresses us out? You're going to hear some techniques on how to get past that, how to have more peace and manage your time more effectively, be more productive, reduce stress. This is an incredible topic for you. And he's going to share this thing he calls Take Five, which is 30 seconds. Now, I'll be honest, I am not a meditating type of guy, but I think we can all do the Take Five technique, just 30 seconds, and it'll make a huge difference. You'll hear about it. All right, so we're going to go to this interview, and the person who did the interview is our own Camille Adams that works here at Daryl Davis Seminars. She's our resident yogi and the guru of graphics for the company. All right, so enjoy, sit back, be present, and soak it all in. All right, until then, don't forget to keep smiling.
Hello, Power Agents. Welcome to this month's Power Agent Magazine interview. I'm Camille Lucy, and I'll be your host today on this very special and unique call. We're doing something a little bit different this month, but I know it's going to be really powerful and really beneficial. So with that said, I'd like to introduce and welcome my guest here today, Long Island's very own mindfulness expert, Corey Mascara. Hi, Corey.
Hi, Camille. Thanks for having me.
How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks a lot.
Good. So I know you're really busy. So just to start out, I want to say I really appreciate that you can be here today with us. So thank you.
My pleasure.
Yeah, so just a few things before we start out. Do you have any contact information, a website, something you can give everybody so that way at the end of the call they can look you up and check out what you do?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, you can find me on all the usual social medias. My main ones are Instagram and Facebook, just at Corey Mascara. I have my Facebook page and my Instagram page, and I'll post lots of different stuff there. And then limindfulness.com if you're on the island, or coreymascara.com if you're outside of the island. And those would be the main places.
All right, awesome. And can you just spell that for me?
Sure, L-I-mindfulness. MINDFULNESS, and then Corey Mascara, CoreyMuscara, .com.
All right, awesome. Thank you.
Welcome.
And then just briefly, before we get into it, I'm going to ask you another question first, but what is mindfulness?
Yeah, you know, there's so many different definitions you could put on it. So I'll give you some of the basic ones of
sure.
Being present, paying attention on purpose in the present moment, non-judgmentally. I like to sometimes see mindfulness as being with experience, but not in experience. And so much, like, so if we think of that as working with a thought or something, or an emotion, if we're paying attention to a thought, so often we're sucked into the narrative of the thought, the content of the thought, the why me, or this is going to happen, or the future, or the past, or whatever it is, and we just mistake it as reality. And so I would consider that getting sucked into the thought, being in the thought. And in mindfulness, we're taking a different orientation where we're aware of what is happening, but without being sucked into the black hole of it. Mm-hmm. And so we can experience joy without perhaps getting so caught up into being attached to it and needing joy. We experience pain without getting so sucked into the actual substance of the pain and the darkness of it and the negative thoughts around it. There's a possibility to shift our relationship to experience where it's like we're becoming an observer of the experience, but still intimately involved with it.
Yeah. And this might sound like common sense to you, but what might a benefit of that be for someone that's new to this?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much coming out around the research supporting the benefits of mindfulness. Consistently, what we see, there have been over 700, there were 750 academic studies published on mindfulness just in 2016 alone.
Wow.
And so tens of thousands, or close to 10,000, I would say, academic studies around the world. And consistently what we see is reductions in stress, anxiety, depression, relapse in depression, improvements in joy, focus, concentration, empathy, productivity. We're seeing associations with longevity of life as well. And even just in the workplace, reduced stress levels, reduced employee turnover rate, better decision-making skills, better listening skills. So there are a lot of benefits that relate not just to well-being, but also optimizing productivity and workplace function, professional function. Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, so this is really something that anyone can benefit from in any field, any career, and life in general.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're conscious, there's great potential in the practice for you. Across domains, across professions, it's being used in very particular ways for purposes of promoting well-being, but also just optimizing life in general.
Hmm. All right, great. So I had been... You know, before we get more into that, I had been to a couple of your workshops, and mm-hmm. you have an interesting story of how you got into this. So you didn't start out in mindfulness. You know, you didn't set out to do this as a career, correct?
Yeah, correct. I was going to go into business. My degree from undergrad is still in managerial economics, but halfway through college, I met a girl. She was kind of a hippie. She was in a meditation. So I started meditating to impress her. And, you know, the rest was kind of history. She broke up with me, but I kept meditating and started taking it seriously. My sleep improved radically. My focus improved radically. My stress levels went down. So I just got really compelled by this and quickly realized I wasn't feeling this passion on the path that I was going down, and at the heart of what I was interested in was just well-being and living a good life. And you could do that in many different professions and in many different ways. I just wanted to understand what are the mechanisms that lead to greater levels of well-being and functioning at a high level. And so exploring the mind seemed like a very clear path to do that. And I had a type A personality even as a meditator. So after I graduated college, I went over to Southeast Asia and I lived as a monk for a period of time.
Wow.
And meditated, you know, 14 hours a day for 6 months. And that just took me very deep into the practice and inspired me to want to teach and just saw how powerful the mind can be, and how much we're often living on automatic pilot. We're not present for our lives.
Yeah.
We're not in touch with what our real core human needs are and desires are. And we're also just swept away constantly by thoughts and emotions and pains and irritation and whatever, like a leaf just blowing around in the winds. And there's great potential to live a lot more intentionally if we develop that capacity.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned that your sleep improved. I know that a lot of people, because they have so many thoughts, they're always constantly on the go, the mind's racing, that they do have trouble sleeping. So you said that when you began this practice, it helped you to sleep better as well?
Yeah, I went from waking up maybe 30 times a night to waking up only 2 to 3 times a night. And that happened within just a couple of weeks of meditation. I mean, that was a pretty drastic shift, and it doesn't happen for everyone in that way.
Yeah.
I do remember that happening. I'm like, oh my God, what is going on? Because I had a night where I did not wake up at all, and I couldn't even remember a night where that happened.
Yeah.
So a lot of it just had to do with my nervous system was settling down. I was training my mind to be a bit more settled, and the corresponding sleep benefits were huge.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing. So you mentioned your nervous system. Is there any science behind the meditation that you can go into a little bit?
There's the general self-report science, where you're doing studies on someone and you ask them to rank, you know, what are your stress levels? And then what are your stress levels afterwards? And so you could see things shifting in that way. But we're also seeing just different parts of the brain when you get measured with MRIs and fMRIs, different parts of the brain start to shift when people engage in meditation practice. In as little as 8 minutes of meditation practice over the course of a couple of months, you'll start to see these structural shifts. Some of these include areas, or one particular area of the brain called the amygdala, which is most responsible for stress reactivity, and that feeling of like you get a message or an email from your boss that says "see me in 10 minutes," and your whole system just like clenches. You know, that's the amygdala at play. It's one of the most primal parts of the brain, and we see that with meditation practice, that the activity in the amygdala starts to reduce and starts to be downregulated and not as hyperactive. And as you increase the amount of time meditating, there's a correlation between the reactivity and the amygdala. So that's quickly just pointing to a nervous system overall that's starting to settle down. It's pointing to, you would notice stress levels starting to go down with that, emotional reactivity going down with that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that, stuff like that. Memory improves as well. We see areas of the brain, such as the hippocampus, responsible for memory, start to grow in physical structure.
Wow.
Areas of the prefrontal cortex, responsible for joy and empathy, these areas start to grow in physical structure. So it's helpful to see the mind or the brain as like a muscle, and the meditation as a form of exercise for the brain.
And that's why
I like to refer to it as sometimes a form of mental fitness.
It is, definitely.
Yeah.
So when people say, you know, I've heard quite a bit, people say, oh, you know, I can't meditate. I have too many thoughts to meditate. You know, they refer to the monkey mind, always going. So what would you say to someone that presents you with those challenges?
Yeah, well, the first thing I would say is stop trying to tame the monkey, or another way to put it, stop trying to clear your mind from thinking.
Yeah.
The biggest frustration people have with meditation is they sit down and they think, all right, I need to clear my mind from thoughts and then I'll be peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
And within 5 seconds, their mind starts racing everything that they need to do. And then they go, I'm an idiot. I can't do this. I have ADD.
Yeah.
I have ADHD. I'm not good at this. I knew I'd be bad at this. and then they never meditate again.
Yeah.
And it just comes from this false idea that we're going to rid the mind of thoughts or sit down and just have a blank mind, where actually the peace and the power of the practice is not so much clearing the mind of thoughts, but it's being able to recognize when a thought is there and not be swept away by it. So
yes,
if one of the first meditations I'll do with people is just, we're just going to sit down and just watch your mind thinking. Watch your mind thinking like clouds passing through the sky, as if you were a little kid lying on your front yard or lying in the grass in a park, just watching the clouds go by. We're going to take that perspective with your thoughts. You don't need to clear it. You don't need to get rid of the clouds. You don't need to judge the thoughts, or it's a bad thought or a good. It's just a thought, just a thought, just a thought.
Yeah.
Watch it come, watch it go, watch it come, watch it go. And for people, what that does is it shifts their relationship to their thinking. It's like, oh, this isn't something I need to get rid of. It's something
yeah.
that I can watch. And
so they're just paying attention then to it.
You're just paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
But there's great peace in that, because it's not paying attention and judging yourself for having the thoughts. It's paying attention and recognizing that there can be some spaciousness around it, and I don't have to take these thoughts so seriously. I don't have
mm-hmm.
to engage in them so deeply. And then it's from that foundation that if you want to focus on something else, like the breath, you can do it. But if the mind wanders off, you don't immediately go into this temper tantrum, like, oh, I'm so bad at this. You just go, all right, the mind is thinking again, and then you gently reorient the attention back to the breath. And maybe
yeah.
you do that 4 billion times in 15 minutes, but great.
Yeah.
Now you're exercising that capacity to focus a bit more deeply.
Yeah. So you mentioned what you do for people starting out, and I know you had said before, I think you said that there were benefits being seen from just 8 minutes of meditation. So if someone was new to the practice, and what's something that they can do to start out?
Yeah. Well, I
How
would
they get started, let's say.
Yeah. There are a number of meditations out there. So if a person is interested in, like, hey, I want to start a meditation practice,
mm-hmm.
then there are a number of apps out there. I teach on an app called Simple Habit. There's a bunch of free meditations on there that a person can start with.
Simple Habit, you said?
Yeah, Simple Habit. It's one app that I teach on. There's also a number of meditations on YouTube. Someone can just type in guided mindfulness meditation and stuff will come up around there. I have some meditations on YouTube as well, so you could Google or type in my name.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of just the basic meditation, that's an awesome place to start. And then just you can be more intentional about bringing some awareness to your life. I sometimes, like, if you're going on a commute or you're driving the same road that you have your entire life and for the last 30 years, see if you can notice something new on your journey. See if you can bring that path, driving that path. And that will also start to engage a different quality of presence in your life, where you start appreciating what's there rather than just moving through everything on automatic pilot.
Yeah.
That will be that capacity will be enhanced through the meditation, and much of the stress reduction and all the benefits that we see through the research that will come through the meditation practice. But there's simple ways that you can bring presence into your life, such as noticing more in your commute, or when you're talking to your child or an employee or a business partner, instead of listening to respond to them, see if you could listen to understand. So you make the intention, and I just listen to this person to understand what they're saying rather than what am I going to say next.
Yeah.
And then the response happens organically. You have a greater sense of connection. You're actually hearing what the person is saying rather than jumping to your own conclusion about what they're saying and what are you going to say next, and I need to keep the flow of the conversation going. That stuff can happen organically when there's deep connection. But we're just so much in this hyperactive, get to the next thing, create value, try to understand, what's this person telling me, that we're not actually listening deeply. So listening to understand rather than listening to respond, another simple way you could start to bring mindfulness into communication.
Yeah, that's great. And there's also, you talked about in a couple of your workshops, mindful eating, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the one exercise we do, which has been around for decades, is the mindful eating exercise with the raisin, where we take a raisin and people are like, all right, what are we doing with this freaking raisin? And then we open the box.
I didn't like raisins until that day.
I didn't like raisins either until I did that exercise. And, yeah, as you know, we walk through it and we take this perspective as if we're Martians from another planet. We've just landed onto Earth. We've never been in bodies before, so we could see, hear, taste, touch, smell, and we could think. And we've been given this food. We at least know that it's edible, so we know we can eat it, but we have other hesitations around it. And so we just explore it. It's like, what is this thing? What can I understand about it? What does it smell like? What does it look like? What does it sound like?
Yeah.
What does it feel like? And then what does it taste like? And, you know, in the same way that a little kid would explore something new in that way, we're taking that perspective. And it really shifts people's relationships to food, and especially to raisins. And it's another way that we can bring this quality of mindfulness of what's called beginner's minds to our moment-to-moment experience.
Yeah, and I actually came home after that and did that with my kids, and they just had a blast with it.
No, that's awesome.
It was a lot of fun. So how long would you say, or is there a time frame, you know, how many minutes people have to spend, let's say, each day doing this to gain the benefits? Or is it not necessarily that way?
Yeah, it's so tough to say. I mean, the latest neuroscience suggests that if you want to get some of the structural shifts in the brain, 8 minutes seems to be the sweet spot for that.
Well, and that's 8 minutes of meditation or of just being mindful?
Yeah, that's 8 minutes of meditation. So either focusing on your breath or doing a body scan, focusing on different areas of the body. But I would say just as a starting point, focusing on the breath, 8 minutes a day, that'll start to get some of those structural shifts. But I don't love that because I know a lot of people that meditate 5 minutes a day and get a lot of benefits out of it. And people that meditate 1 or 2 minutes a day and get benefits out of it.
Yeah.
So I like to say it's just whatever you feel like you're going to do. And don't make this another thing where you oppress yourself into having to meditate now. Because now you're going to associate it with more pain. It's another to-do. It's another, like, need to get this done. And then you just drop it. So make this something that can be something that is realistic to fit in your life, but also something that you enjoy, and it's not another form of tyranny against yourself.
Yeah, so it's something for you, not something you have to do. It's something that you're doing for yourself.
Correct.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
So, let me think. So you had done a super simple exercise to bring everyone into the present moment during one of your workshops with the hand, the five fingers.
Take five. If you're listening and you want to do this together, you can do it with me. But the way it works is you take out your left hand and you take your right pointer finger and you place it in the palm of your hand right around your wrist. And then you slide the pointer finger up the thumb, taking an inhale. And then slide back down, take an exhale. And then you could do the same on your pointer finger, same on your middle finger, ring finger, pinky finger. So just going up and down, breathing in, breathing out, feeling the sensations of the finger as you go up and down. And the simple exercise called Take Five, it's short, it's easy, it's concrete, there's a clear beginning, a clear end.
Yeah.
And you can do it in like less than 30 seconds. And what's great about it is the tactile nature of it, so feeling the sensations of your fingers and aligning that with your breath really seems to be settling for people. And it's a mindfulness exercise because it drops you into the present moment.
Yeah.
But even above that, it's just a basic relaxation exercise. And when you're feeling stressed out or overwhelmed or worried or you're just caught up in your thoughts, you can do this. Just take five, drop back into the present moment. Is it going to make your life 100% better? No. You're still going to have to deal with the stresses of your life. It's not a miracle cure. But what it often does do is it can help like relax us maybe like 5 to 10%. And that 5 to 10% goes a long way throughout the day from keeping us from being completely overwhelmed or feeling like we're just stretching the rubber band so far to the point of it snapping.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, take five. And you can Google this on YouTube. Google mindfulness take five or Corey Mascara take five, and you'll see a video of me doing it.
Yeah, yeah, and that's great because anyone can do that anywhere. So
correct.
All right.
Yeah,
so
and kids love it as well. So if you have kids, they can do it too. So it's a great, simple little exercise.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'll have to try it with them next.
Great.
And they're whining and oh. So I know that you have workshops. You do all sorts of things. I know you also do corporate mindfulness. Is that correct?
Yeah, I do a lot of presentations in Fortune 500 companies, just corporations in general, within the country and outside of the country. So it's a big part of my work.
Yeah. So, who would you say is maybe one of your most interesting or unique clients that you've had so far?
Well, I've done a lot of work with Prudential. When you say clients, do you mean individual or corporations?
I meant companies, but it can be either.
Companies? Yeah. Across the board, there are similar themes in a lot of companies. I really appreciated working with American Greetings. They've created this beautiful workplace. Yeah, the card company.
Oh, wow.
I talked to them in Cleveland recently. And they had such a warm and engaging workplace culture. They have a committee that's just devoted to delivering happiness throughout the organization and helping to make employees' lives better. So I think just that sort of intentionality, how can we improve workplace culture? How can we improve the well-being? Obviously, there's still a focus on success and making money that needs to be a part of an organization. But they recognize that if the employees are at their best, they're going to be offering the services at their best. They're not going to be burnt out. They're going to be more engaged. They're going to be more creative and end up getting more things done. So that was a really warm environment, and I told them just how much I appreciated what they're doing and also being able to share mindfulness with them.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
So let's say someone listening wants to bring mindfulness into their company or offer something. Mm-hmm. Do you have anything to say on that? Any suggestions? Is there anything you do or any recommendations you have for them wanting to bring it into their company?
Yeah, so, I mean, it can work in a lot of different ways. It does tend to be helpful to bring a speaker in or someone in that knows the practice to give an overview to people of, like, what this is, why it's worth cultivating, what are the benefits, what's the science behind it, what are some basic practices. And that's often used as a big kickstart. And at least in my presentations, I offer tons of follow-up resources for folks in the corporation to utilize and the 31-day course that they can utilize. So something like that is beneficial. I mean, I'm speaking more like what my particular process is. I know it's done other ways, and the main thing is to have some champion of mindfulness or ambassador either within the company or that comes in outside of the company just to get it going in the workplace culture. But the main way that I see it being introduced is usually there's an event, either a day-long event, an hour-long keynote, or two-day workshop, and then from there, using either that same person to come in to do more workshops or leveraging different apps and online resources to sustain the meditation practice. Once the employees know what the practice is and they've bought in, there are an infinite number of ways that they can engage in the meditation and explore it through books, through apps, through just self-research and meditation groups in their local community. And then from there, different meditation groups within the corporation can pop up. Book clubs around mindfulness can pop up. You bring in other speakers around mindfulness. So all of that can blossom. But usually it starts with having a guest speaker come in.
Yeah, okay, that's great. And if someone just individually wanted to learn more, so if they're on Long Island, they can attend your workshops. You have a few of them, correct?
Yeah. I have a three-hour workshop that I run once every 3 or 4 months, typically in Plainview. And so that's on my website, limindfulness.com.
Okay.
And I have a retreat that I run a couple times a year. So all of that can be found on my website. But there, depending on where you're listening, if you're on the island or someplace else, you just Google mindfulness in my area or meditation in my area. You can find some groups or resources nearby that can be available to you. And if you're just starting out, if you want to understand more of the business case for it, you could YouTube just my name and then mindfulness and business. I know these sound like old plugs for me. It's just all the only resources I have or that I'm most familiar with I'm doing. But there's plenty of stuff out there to get started.
And how does what you have on mindfulness in business differ from just an individual practice?
Well, that's just me talking. So I did an interview with my buddy who worked at Prudential. And he interviewed me on how is mindfulness business relevant. So you could see a short clip, say like 5 to 10 minutes on YouTube, and then corresponding meditation around that. So if somebody wanted to get started, it's just a basic access point, especially if you're in the business world.
Yeah. So that would definitely be helpful, I'm sure, to everyone listening. Do you offer any virtual programs, or you just have what's on your YouTube and that's it?
I do have online courses. You went to my other website, CoreyMascara.com.
You can see
my 31-day. Yeah, sorry. I know. There's my Long Island stuff, and then there's Corey Mascara. But that website has my 31-day mindfulness course.
If
somebody wanted to go through that, yeah.
Okay, so that's 31 days that starts you out in the beginning and progresses you through a month-long practice?
Yeah, I designed that course to be just to have a lot of value. So a low-cost program that just really gives people everything they need to get started.
Hello?
Can you hear me, Camille?
We lost you for a minute.
Okay, I'm back.
You said can you just say that again? Sorry, you have to repeat it.
So it's just the course is mainly just designed to walk people through 31 days. It gives them a talk, and it gives them a corresponding meditation. And every day there's a new topic, from working on focus, cultivating calm, acceptance, letting go, habit formation, optimism, resilience. So it blends mindfulness and positive psychology, science, with just actual meditation practice.
Oh, that's awesome. And what is, for everyone listening, positive psychology?
Yeah, positive psychology is a field of psychology, a field of science specifically oriented at what is well-being, what is happiness, how do we understand it, how do we measure it, how do we facilitate it for individuals, groups, and organizations. So it's psychology as a whole, while at its heart aims to cultivate well-being for anyone, has historically had an emphasis more on pathology and bringing people from maybe a -8 to a -2 or a -5 to 0. Positive psychology is a bit more oriented on the other side of the scale of cultivating well-being, flourishing. When we have a baseline of things are okay, how do we take life to the next level of happiness, well-being, success, etc.
Oh, well, and you teach positive psychology?
I do. I did my master's in it at the University of Pennsylvania, and I teach as an assistant instructor for that program at the University of Pennsylvania.
Oh, very cool. All right. Yeah. So the website for the 31 Days of Mindfulness, can you just repeat that again?
Yeah, just corymuscara.com. CoryMuscara.
All right. Awesome. So we just have a few more minutes here. So is there anything that we didn't touch on that you would want to say? Are there any myths that you can bust for everybody listening? Or is there anything that you would want everyone listening to walk away with?
Yeah. As a walk away, people are going to be coming to this practice for different reasons. A lot of people, the access point is trying to reduce stress, trying to focus, trying to improve well-being. And I also just want to say that there's a lot of depth and a lot of layers to this practice. Mm-hmm. And on the most fundamental level, to me, it's getting acquainted with what does it mean to be a human being. We all have these lives, this one life. We don't know if there's something after. Maybe there is, maybe there's not. But we at least know we have this one life. And it's really complex. Nobody gives us an owner's manual for how to be a human being.
Yeah.
You're sort of just left to your own devices to figure out what does it mean to be a human being, and the existential crisis of what happens after death, and we're the only animals that know at some point in our lives we're going to die. It's that's a really big thing to hold with us.
Yeah.
And to just start to give ourselves some permission to not have all of the answers, to realize life is really complex. Being a human being is messy and difficult. And to not beat yourself up over every instance that is not perfect just goes a long way in making this being human thing more peace and more rich. So you can still be successful. You can still chase your dreams, still have goals, but cut yourself a little bit of slack in the process, because if you don't, then, I mean, what's the point of achieving a dream if you're just going to be miserable once you get there? And for many people, that's the case.
Yeah.
So you can have your cake, you can eat it too, and you can enjoy while you're eating it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you. And then just quick, I saw on your website that you also offer coaching.
Yeah, I don't do, unfortunately, my speaking and travel schedule has developed quite a bit that I don't do as much individual coaching these days. But if somebody has been working with me or they're really motivated to do one-on-one work, sometimes that's an option. But it's a case-by-case basis, yeah.
All right, great. So is there anything else you want to add?
No, I think that's it. I think we hit all the main points.
Yeah, this is really awesome. Again, I appreciate it so much. I know that you're so busy. had to squeeze this
pleasure.
In while you were driving.
I hope the sound came out all right.
Except for that one little cutout. We were good. So thank you so much.
Good. My pleasure, Camille. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye now.